Welcome to the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Hagen, a nutrition coach, entrepreneur, food freedom expert, and forever a recovering disordered eater. I am here to help you own your enoughness, find your very own food freedom, and achieve your health and wellness goals in a way that gives more than it takes. Each week, I will provide you with insight and inspiration surrounding no-nonsense nutrition, mindset, motivation, body image, confidence, and other wellness wisdom. Welcome back to another episode of the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast featuring myself and Coach Lauren. Hi, Lauren.
Hello, Nicole. Hello, everybody.
How are you? What's new and exciting in your world? Tell us something fun.
New and exciting. So, well, we were talking about this earlier. I've been hitting up the concert circuit around town, going to Kids Bop one day and Beyonce the next. And it was, both were great. Gotta give the edge to Beyonce. She was incredible. And then kids are back at school this week. So kind of a lot going on, but all fun and good things. And they had an amazing first day. Like, I had three very happy and excited kids at home yesterday. So crazy time, but all good things. What about you?
I don't have any school age children yet, obviously, but I feel like this is the time of the year when a lot of my clients just get so excited who are moms, because it's like, oh, I can get some semblance of routine back. Not that they don't absolutely adore and cherish and love their children. Of course they do, but it's just nice having a little bit more like mental space and physical space too, to get some me time back and just be able to prioritize your schedule a little bit more.
As a work from home mom, having them back at school for me is like game changer. Like you said, I loved having them home. I'm very grateful that I've been able to stay home and work and go do all the fun summertime things with them. But it's also very draining physically and mentally. So it is very nice to have my routine back and my time back that I can be productive without my brain going in like a thousand different directions while I'm trying to do one thing.
I can relate a little bit. I actually shared this on Instagram the other day. I was trying to get some work done. I also work from home and I like to leave my office door open, because if I close it, the Florida sun like beats in my window and I get sweatier than usual, which is like just a gross level of sweaty. So if anyone else in my household is here, they just invite themselves into my office. So it's like a little party congregating on the floor. And it's like two puppy dogs and then a baby. And then my husband was in here and I was like, can you all please just give me 10 minutes to finish this work before we then can enjoy the rest of our evening? But there's just something about moms and everyone needing to be like immediately next to them.
So my kids are much older than baby age and it is still the same. I laugh every time if I'm sitting on like the edge of the couch by the armchair and there's the whole rest of the couch, they will try to sit every time without fail, all three of them, in between me and the armchair where there's like 2 inches of space. And I'm just always like, what? Like, sit on the other side at least if you want to be this close to me. Why are we squeezing our little butts into these 2 inches of couch? But, you know, it's just that mom life thing. And I know these years are fleeting and trying to soak it all up at the same time. And
the best compliment.
Human. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I tease them all the time. Why are you guys so obsessed with me? Like, back up.
It's the best compliment. It's so sweet. And personal space is also sanity. So,
yeah. Gotta kind of blend the two worlds.
Exactly. All right, Lauren, we've got to dive in because we're on a timeline and we have four fantastic questions to answer today. We'll see if we get to all of them. The first question came in on Instagram. And the question is, does your program count calories?
Ooh, this is not a yes or no answer. This is an answer with so many gray areas. So no, we don't do traditional calorie counting with our program. We are not macro coaches. That being said, I know I have clients, and I know you do as well, that find some benefit in temporarily tracking their calories. I actually have a client right now. We've been working together for months, and now she decided to get really focused on a fat loss phase, and she is finding a lot of benefit with tracking her food for the time being, knowing that it's a temporary tool that she's using. So it is absolutely not mandatory. At the same time, whether or not you are choosing to track your calories, count your calories in any way whatsoever, we need to be aware of the fact that no matter what the goal is, calories count, whether or not we're counting them. If you have a fat loss goal, or even if you just want to improve your health and maintain your current weight, or if you want to go into a build and build some muscle, we need to be aware of the impact that calories are having on those goals. And we need to be aware of how much food we're taking in some way. So with a lot of clients who have never tracked calories or never tracked their food in any way, a food journal in any way, even if it's not traditional calorie counting, I find can be a really helpful for education purposes. And then we can utilize that to, you know, make tweaks to their diet and help them reach whatever goal that they may be working towards. So I feel like, long story short, is no. The simple answer is no, we don't count calories. The much longer answer is you can absolutely use calorie counting as a temporary tool. You can absolutely use calorie counting to gain awareness about your current eating habits, because the vast majority of people are eating way more than they realize. And calories always count. And that's okay. Like, I feel like people get very triggered by the thought of calories sometimes, but they're really just units of measurements in our food. They're giving our body energy. We need them. They're not a, it's not a dirty word to say calories. It's just something that if you have that calorie awareness, it's going to make meeting any health related goal that you have that much easier. So we also can teach our clients how to build that calorie awareness if calorie counting is something they want nothing to do with. We can kind of meet in the middle there and do both. So it's a lot of yes and no's in that answer. Nicole, I want to hear your thoughts.
Honestly, parallel yours beautifully. My first initial knee-jerk reaction was no. And then I was like, okay, that was a little aggressive. Let me explain. And I explained to this woman that we teach our clients to be calorie aware because, like you said, calories matter and they always count. But our ultimate goal is to help each and every one of our clients to create healthy eating habits and results, whatever that looks like in terms of fat loss or health promotion goals, that are sustainable. And for most everyone, that doesn't include counting calories for the rest of their lives. So while, like you said, a lot of our clients choose to track calories in a short-term experiment, sometimes that's, hey, let's take a three-day food log and see what information we can gain from that. Sometimes it's, hey, I'm going to track for 3 months because I really want the reflection and the self-awareness that keeping a proactive food journal gives me in my fat loss phase. So the timeline can differ, but anywhere from 50 to 70% of our clients do gather data and increase awareness by tracking their food in some way, shape, or form. But we always want to help them wean off of that behavior and never utilize the tracking app as like a crutch or something that they feel their results are dependent on. So the answer is no and to that question.
I look at tracking calories when it comes to, this is kind of more fat loss specific, but when we're tracking calories, I like to describe it as it's the shortcut to results. And if you can use it and you feel mentally well about that decision and you're coming at it with the right mindset, great. You can take that shortcut and then you can wean yourself off of it with the help of a coach. And if you don't want to count calories, I look at that as like, that's the scenic route, which is fine. You don't, you can take the scenic route and you can enjoy it. And some people might find it much more enjoyable. Just be aware that it is the scenic route. And sometimes it might take a little bit longer to get to those results. And there's nothing wrong with that. It probably is going to be a little bit more sustainable for most people. And like I said, a little bit more enjoyable. So if you look at it like that, again, when it comes to fat loss, you can count calories and it'll get you there probably a little bit quicker, or you don't have to, and you can just take that longer route and that more enjoyable scenic route to your results, and you're still going to end up in the same place. One might just take a little bit more time and a little bit more practice before you really like kind of get into a good groove with it, I find personally.
I would maybe argue a little bit that if you go the shortcut, right, with calorie counting, it might take you just as long if you're conscientious about intentionally weaning yourself off of calorie counting and then learning how to self-regulate using the habits that the long scenic route person is taking anyway, right? The things that we teach our clients, honoring hunger and fullness cues, eating to 80% full, being mindful of portion size and how to build a balanced plate, et cetera. I still agree with you that the calorie counting gives you that immediate validation, like, hey, you're within your range for the day. Whereas trusting your habits and your skills and the biofeedback your body gives you is a little bit less immediate. but isn't that the ultimate goal, that we want, like, not to count calories all the time and to have that, like, trust and faith in ourselves? So if we end up taking calorie counting and then transitioning to that more like intuitive habitual style of eating, I'm wondering if it takes the same amount of time anyway.
That's a fantastic point. And I actually think the big thing that jumps out at me, what you were just talking about, was the fact that I find a lot of people are afraid to come off tracking because they don't have that trust. Like, they just don't trust themselves that they're going to know how to feed themselves without this external validation. So yes, that point that you made is fantastic. It might actually take you the same amount of time to get to the end place of maintaining a happy weight without tracking calories and having that just like healthy habit foundation. And most of all, trust in yourself that you can do it without counting traditional calories. So yeah, maybe it's not a shortcut. Maybe it all gets you to the same place in the same amount of time. It's just different routes.
Bottom line is, there's nothing evil about calorie counting. It's a completely neutral tool that can be used in beneficial ways and detrimental ways. We have clients who, from day one to day graduation, reach their goal, never count a calorie in their lives because maybe they have previous negative experiences with calorie counting. Well, then obviously they would have counted a calorie in their life. You know what I mean? Throughout their coaching journey, they have not counted a calorie. But I would say the majority of our clients do use calorie counting as a short-term tool to gain some insight and awareness. And then, like we talked about, we're relying mostly on building that self-trust, listening to their body's cues, knowing what nutrition components they need at a meal, at a snack, to help them feel their best and stay in that calorie deficit if fat loss is the goal, or eat at maintenance if and when that's the goal. All right, next question. Let's go. Should I worry about starchy vegetables?
I like this one because, to me, the short answer is no. I don't think you should necessarily worry about them at all. You shouldn't really worry about any food choice that you have. And I actually think it kind of goes together with our previous question that we just answered. So starchy vegetables, you want to look at them as a high fiber, nutrient dense carbohydrate source. Like, fantastic. Those should be a part of your everyday diet. Potatoes are actually one of the most satiating foods that you can eat, meaning you're going to get a lot of bang for your buck out of eating a potato. And whether that's a white potato or a sweet potato or whatever kind of potato you enjoy, you're going to feel very satiated. You're going to feel fuller longer by incorporating things like that into your diet. It's just going to come down to what is the correct portion for your specific goal. Are you eating enough carbs to support your energy levels and support your workouts? Are you not eating too much that it's pushing you into a caloric surplus if fat loss is the goal? How are you using them? Are they covered in butter and, you know, all the good yummy things that sometimes make them really delicious to eat? So again, you can't just say, nope, don't worry about starchy vegetables, move on. To me, it's no, we shouldn't worry about any of our food choices. We should be eating starchy vegetables because they're a fantastic source of fiber and nutrients. We just need to focus on each individual's portions that are going to align with their goals, their activity levels, their, you know, desired outcomes.
I agree with you. And I think before answering this question, I would want to know more information about the person asking the question. So if this person asking was at the beginning of their nutrition journey, they had very limited nutrition knowledge. Maybe they had a larger amount of body fat that they wanted to lose, and they were just starting a coaching journey, I would tell them, absolutely not do I want you to think about starchy v. non-starchy vegetables. I want you to eat any and all vegetables that you enjoy. Include a variety of them in your meals and snacks. Don't worry about the starch capacity or like the carbohydrate quantity. I also think maybe to take a back step, what counts as a starchy vegetable typically would be corn, potatoes, you mentioned, peas, beets, squash, turnips, and sometimes carrots can fall into that category too, depending on who you're asking. But lima beans also, those can be like a really starchy veggie. If you're at the beginning of your journey, don't worry about it. It's like mowing your lawn while your house is on fire. If you're freaking out about eating a carrot or having some lima beans on your plate, or like you're eating corn and someone says that doesn't count as a real vegetable, tell them where to shove it. But if you are at the very end of your nutrition coaching journey, if you are I don't know, getting ready to compete in some sort of event. If you're trying to lose the last 5 pounds of vanity weight, if you know all of the nutrition basics, you have all of your habits down consistently, sure, maybe we can start looking at starchy vegetables, because yes, they do have more carbohydrates when compared to non-starchy vegetables. And yes, that means they're slightly more caloric than less starchy vegetables. So it could be helpful to swap out other higher carbohydrates for starchy veggies and then have a second serving of non-starchy vegetables. Is that something you have to do? Absolutely not. Especially if you love your grains and other carbohydrate options, but it might be a very advanced strategy you could use later on in your journey. But bottom line, plants are great. Eat all plants. Whether they're starchy or not is kind of like my foundational philosophy when it comes to starchy vegetables.
Beautifully said. If you're not eating enough vegetables now, eat the starchy ones if that's what you enjoy. It also made me think of when I, and I've talked about this before, when I was helping run those Whole 30 challenges at the gym I used to work at, I remember somebody was like, just almost ashamed to admit that they had eaten a white potato. Heaven forbid they ate a white potato. And I just remember saying like, yeah, you shouldn't be worrying about the fact that you ate a white potato. Like, it's fine. It's a vegetable. We need to be eating vegetables. I think you did nothing wrong at all. And then obviously what's really wrong with that whole situation is that diet. But that's another topic for another time. Yeah, I think eat the vegetables if you're not eating vegetables in whatever way you enjoy them, whatever ones you enjoy.
Okay, fun fact. I had a former client send me a video yesterday and she said, interesting, because I believe it was a woman speaking and I don't remember her name, but I believe she's like the creator or the face of Whole 30. And she was talking about how in the upcoming months, 2023, you're going to see a rebrand of Whole 30 and they're taking away bad foods, off limits foods, toxic foods, and they're embracing a more all foods fit mentality. And she was saying, this is because we've realized that there are no bad foods and all foods can be incorporated in a balanced diet. So I don't know what that's going to look like in like actuality, but it was a big pivot for Whole 30.
You know, I have to really applaud anybody who can stand up and say like, hey, I've learned something that has changed my mind and I'm willing to make adjustments. Like, that's pretty incredible because they've built a pretty successful brand on their current diet plan, right? So I actually have a lot of respect for somebody like that who's had a lot of success that can stand up and say like, hey, actually, we've come to the realization that maybe we didn't have it quite right and we're going to make these adjustments moving forward. I think that's really awesome.
It's so noteworthy and very impressive because, like you said, the Whole 30 brand could change nothing and go on, continue being very successful. But I think what's happened is there's some cool research saying, hey, when we're so divisive and binary with our relationship with food, we actually do a lot of damage, not just physically, but mentally. And so to realize that, it shows me that you ultimately want what's best for the participants in your program, which is super admirable.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's exciting. I'm going to have to go look that up.
I'll send you the video.
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
Okay, third question. I'm really excited about this one. I'd love to hear your thoughts on girl dinner. Can you talk about that in an upcoming episode? First and foremost, Lauren, can you tell us what girl dinner is for anyone who maybe is not as social media savvy as some of us are?
Okay, I don't know if I would describe myself as social media savvy, and I feel like the old lady who's like not really on TikTok, but because I am in this industry, I have read a lot about girl dinner, and from what I can see, it's basically almost like a snack plate type dinner, and it's the idea behind it is these single women are, instead of cooking themselves meal, they're throwing together balanced plates of random food from their, you know, pantry, their kitchen, whatever they have. And it's become a thing called girl dinner because it's mostly, I guess, these like single women who aren't cooking big, giant, you know, balanced meals for themselves. So that is my understanding of it. My thoughts on it are it can be fantastic. Like, you can easily create a well-balanced meal out of some snacks, and it can be a really fun way to have a meal and clean out your pantry and to eliminate or lower your food waste and things like that. Like, if you just pick a category, if you pick a carbohydrate, a protein, a fat, and you add, you know, some kind of fun flavorings onto a plate, like, that's a balanced meal. it can be, like I said, it can be fun and tasty, and you can include all kinds of things that you enjoy. Like, you could have, you know, some sliced turkey, you could have some rice cakes with it, or some, like we were saying, some starchy veggies. You could have some carrot sticks with a yummy hummus dip or something like that. Like, you can make a really beautiful plate, and it can be really fun way to mix it up in the kitchen. I don't know. I have positive thoughts about it, as long as you're not, you know, making a teeny tiny snack and calling it girl dinner, I guess would be my only concern, is that you're under eating and calling it girl dinner.
Exactly. Yes. So based on my understanding, I think this is like a TikTok originating concept. It's been around for ages. So I use a lot of verbiage with my clients, like adult Lunchable or bento box. It's the same thing. It's like a single serving charcuterie board, essentially.
That's what I was just going to say.
Which sounds great. I think the concept was embrace low effort meals as opposed to like overexerting yourself as a great alternative to like cooking something with 25 ingredients that takes an hour after a long, hard day's work, which is brilliant. Because we can't have nice things and we have to take everything to the extreme, diet culture then kind of grabbed a hold of girl dinner and started using it as a justification for disordered eating. So, oh, I can just have like a little noshy, a little snack, and I'll call it dinner. Yay! So you could put like a few nibbles on a tray, call it girl dinner as justification for unhealthy behavior. But I think the original intent behind girl dinner and what I would recommend anyone do is create a balanced snack board when you just really don't feel like cooking, or maybe it's too hot to turn the oven on. Or like you said, you want to use some things up in your fridge, your pantry, whatever, and have it be a delicious low effort meal. Now, I would recommend to all of my clients, and I would do this myself, that it's a balanced snack plate. So maybe don't skimp on the protein. Lots of snacks don't include a lot of protein. You mentioned some low sodium turkey breast deli meat. I had a client the other day who like had some rotisserie chicken just kind of loosely on the side of her lunch because she wanted a protein boost. There's lots of different things you could do. Edamame is a great like girl dinner protein option. A vegetable would be fantastic, some sort of fiber source. A carbohydrate is going to be really easy to find because who doesn't love a snacky carb, and your healthy fat. So as long as it's balanced, I think it can be a fantastic alternative to making a full-blown dinner. And I think it's worth noting, there's nothing inherently feminine about girl dinner. It's just a fun, flirty descriptor of like something totally benign and gender neutral. So you could be familied, single, old, young, male, female, like it does not matter whatsoever. I think another parallel example is hot girl walk. It's just a walk.
I was just going to say it. Yep.
It's just a walk. That too. If it makes you feel better about calling it a hot girl walk, you go ahead.
Yeah. No, the only thing hot right now is just the fact that it is miserably suffocatingly hot where I'm at. But yeah, when it comes to girl dinner, I was actually thinking as you were talking, this summer we were just on the go quite a bit. And I would like pack up my lunches pretty regularly. And that's essentially what I was doing, right? I'm not a big like sandwich person as a vegetarian. I find them hard to make a high protein sandwich. So I would do like a lot of like diced hard boiled eggs with crackers on the side and some cut up bell peppers and maybe a protein bar if I felt like I needed a little extra boost, or some apple slices. Like I did that quite a bit over the summer as I was out and about with my kids. And yes, that's the basic idea of girl dinner, is a snacky, fun charcuterie board meal for yourself. Like you said, though, have it for the family, have it for, if you're a guy, go ahead and have a fun little meal and call it girl dinner and move on and enjoy it.
Yeah. I think similar to calorie counting or calories in general, the concept is completely neutral. It's a dinner that maybe you don't need a utensil to eat. Maybe it's a little bit more hodgepodge than like something you cook or blend all together on a stovetop. But whether it's a positive, beneficial thing or whether it's a negative, detrimental thing is all in the motivation behind why you're using it. Am I using this as justification to eat so few calories I can barely call it a meal? That's not great. Yeah, we should probably look at that. But am I using this because the alternative was not having a meal or ordering takeout that would leave me feeling like crap because I genuinely didn't want to cook something? Make a snack tray, call it girl dinner, have a blast. Yeah.
Everything really starts out as neutral until we assign it some kind of value. So, I mean, yeah, eating anything and everything can be neutral, it can be positive, it can be negative. So look at your mindset if you feel like you're struggling, or maybe you're eating girl dinner and still feeling hungry afterwards. Like, make sure you're fueling your body. It's okay to eat enough.
That is a, yeah, let's put that on a t-shirt. It's okay to eat enough. I like that.
No kidding. Sometimes I show my meals because I'm like, I like a good solid sized meal. And I think a lot of people don't see that. They see these like tiny little meals. And I'm like, no, I want to sit down to a full meal. I'm going to show that off on Instagram because it's okay to eat full meals. Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
You know what? I struggle with the opposite, where I just did this yesterday on Instagram. I was eating outside and I had my, it wasn't a girl lunch, but it was like cucumber salad with some tomatoes and feta and chicken and balsamic. And I had it in this little bowl and I was eating it outside and I took a picture of it. And then I was like, ugh, this is not 100% representative because that meal has no carbohydrate. And you know me, I am not having a meal without a carbohydrate unless it's a very rare situation. So then I came inside and had some fruit and some air popped popcorn. That was not in the picture. And I was like, oh, I hope people don't think like this is the only thing I'm eating, because almost always I'm taking those four food groups because I want to feel great. And I know that if I don't have those four things, I'm not feeling that great and I'm going to be hungry so much sooner after. So yeah, it's important to have representation of all things on social media.
Just because somebody's showing a what I eat in the day doesn't mean that that's all they ate in a day. So it's okay if your real life eat in a day looks different from the ones on Instagram.
Yeah, so true. Okay, this last question could be its own episode. Maybe it needs to be. We'll see what we can cover today.
Okay.
What is fat bias and do I have it?
I find this so interesting. Basically, I mean, fat bias is going to be somebody who believes that being fat is inherently bad. Being fat means you are unhealthy. Knowing nothing else about a person and their health metrics, if fat equals bad, fat equals unhealthy, fat equals unworthy. So to me, that is what a fat bias is. And I would assume, I do think we all have these biases that we're maybe not even fully aware of because we have been so conditioned by just, you know, social media and just content that's out there that we might not even realize that we're feeling that way. And so if you start to kind of question, like, why am I thinking maybe, like, why am I unhappy in my body? Is it because I just feel like I need to be thinner? Because thin equals good, thin equals happiness, thin equals worthiness. It might be worth really exploring that and thinking, okay, do I have this fat bias? How is it impacting my life and me? Because we need to put our blinders on and not worry about what anybody else is doing and kind of get really introspective and figure out, what are your thoughts on maybe being overweight or being fat? Or like, what are your real thoughts on that? And unpack all of that. I feel like that's, I don't know, something like heavy work for some people to do because it's been so ingrained in us that fat equals bad and we shouldn't be fat and fat is a thing to avoid. There's just so much to unpack. And I think it's just important that you focus on your own thoughts about it and what it means for your like body image for yourself and how you're thinking about yourself and your health and your worth and making sure you're not waiting until you hit this specific number on the scale or until you feel like you're thin enough to be happy, because it's really important to note that if being thin made people happy, there'd be a lot of happy, thin, happy people out there and nobody who's thin would be unhappy. And that's just not the case. So understand what your motivation is. If you're thinking fat is bad, I need to avoid being fat, I need to lose weight. And that could be a good thing to ask yourself and kind of think through.
I think most of us could benefit from asking ourselves that question. Other phrases are like terms. So this individual said fat bias. It could also be called weight bias, sometimes called fat phobia or weight stigma. Basically, it's just describing the attitudes and stereotypes surrounding and attached to larger bodies. So if I think of examples of fat phobia, like in real life, we see a lot of these because of diet culture. A few examples would be clothing stores not stocking diverse sizes or using diverse models. So I don't know if you remember, Lauren, when Nike came out with like the larger bodied mannequin and it, like the world freaked out, right? Because of course, no one who exercises can possibly live in a larger body. please read the sarcasm. Another example, restaurants or doctor's offices or airplanes, et cetera, not having chairs that are large enough for people to sit in who live in larger bodies. Appearance-based compliments. This is one most of us struggle with. Things like, wow, you've lost so much weight, without considering why or how people have lost weight and that they may be engaging in like healthy, dangerous behavior in order to do that. Medical discrimination. This one breaks my heart. But basically where doctors are ignoring the real issue or the complaint that you're coming in with, and instead they're just saying, oh, you should lose weight, because maybe they're looking at your BMI or something like that instead of actually seeing you as a person and giving you unsolicited dieting advice. I actually was just talking with a client who had not been to the doctors in years. And when I asked her why, she said that she has a sister who lives in a larger body and has constantly experienced medical discrimination. And now that she's gained some weight herself, she's so fearful that a doctor will only see and reference her weight and not take her seriously. So people are not getting care that they need and deserve because they're concerned about how they will be discriminated against for living in a larger body. Which is just so sad and unacceptable when you think about it. And then to kind of go off what you said, Lauren, using fat as an insult, when actually it's a totally benign, neutral descriptor, like being tall or short or having brown eyes or blue eyes, that does not equal bad.
I've seen it described as like the last accepted prejudice, like against fat people. Because there's a lot of times people say, well, we're just worried about their health. First of all, put your blinders on and care about yourself. Like, unless somebody that you love is coming to you and asking you for help and you want to be a support to them, a stranger's weight has nothing to do with you. You need to just focus on yourself. And second of all, it is shocking to me sometimes how accepted it is. And when you were talking, I was reminded, Lizzo was in my town about, I think it was April, and there were, like, you know, on my Facebook feed or something, some news articles about the fact that she was here and she posed in front of the arch. And the comments underneath this picture were so despicable and so disgusting and just really heartbreaking. And it was like very common. Like, I would say more of them than not were very fat phobic and very negative towards Lizzo just simply because she lives in a larger body. So it's very real. And like, I do think it's sad if we think about it as this like last accepted, you know, prejudice against people that are just walking around living their lives. It is not okay to comment on anybody's body ever unless you're being directly asked.
I think the world would be a much better place if we all realized that weight and body size do not determine the health of an individual. So someone might say, but I'm just worried about their health. And what you really mean is, I'm just worried about their size. Because health, according to the World Health Organization, is multifaceted and determined by a lot more than just body weight. That's a factor, but health is, according to them, a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease. So actually, speaking of Lizzo, wasn't there like a lawsuit because she was discriminating against like her backup dancers? And
yeah, I have not like deep dived into it, so I don't feel like I can speak on it. But I know I was like, oh, no, not Lizzo. Yeah.
Allegedly, I don't know anything about it either, aside from a headline. She was weight shaming her backup dancers. So whether or not that's true, right, that remains to be seen. This does speak to the fact that you can experience weight bias, fat phobia, regardless of your body size. So you could hypothetically live in a larger body and be fat phobic, which is why you want to lose weight and live in a smaller body. Not because you think it's going to actually enhance your life, not because you can draw parallels of how it will improve your health, well-being, mental, physical, but because you think you're going to be a better, more worthy person based on what diet culture has wrongly taught us. That can be true. I do think a lot of the time it's people who live in smaller bodies discriminating against people who live in larger bodies, but it's not exclusive based on your body size.
I do think Taylor Swift got in trouble because she had a video where she was the anti-hero video, and she like got on a scale and it just said fat, and people really kind of were upset about that, thinking like, okay, so are you saying fat is this bad thing to be? And I don't know. I have like mixed feelings, like maybe that's invalidating her experience. But yes, I do also find it to be a little fat phobic if the bad thing in your life is that the scale says you're fat. And, you know, that is like this worst case scenario is that you're fat. I mean, yeah, I do think just as a culture, we all need to get a little bit better about separating body size, like you were saying, and health and worthiness and happiness. Because if you're in a little bit of a larger body, but you're generally a happy person, great. I mean, like, then I'm happy for you that you're happy. So, yeah, I think as a society, we just need to separate the two and not only focus on one facet of our health when there's so many other just as important ones.
If you're like, okay, that's cool, what do I do about it? There are a lot of ways that we can all work to challenge weight bias and fat phobia. And I think this is ongoing, right? Because diet culture is constantly like whispering in one ear, like, your body's broken if you live in a bigger body, or it needs to be fixed. And we constantly have to be like fighting against that voice a little bit. There are a couple things that I would recommend. One, diversify your feed. Are you following people, even in the health and fitness space? I have done this. So there are lots of people out there who are exercising, who are talking about eating well, who are just generally like promoting great health, who also live in larger bodies. Do you see any of those on your social media feed, or are all the people you follow white women who live in naturally thin bodies? Or maybe they're thin because they engage in unhealthy eating behavior. I don't know. It's not my business, but diversify your feed. Two, challenge weight bias or fat phobic thoughts that you find yourself having. So maybe you see someone who lives in a larger body and you're like, wow, they really don't take care of themselves. Do you know that? Nope, you don't. That's a totally fat phobic thing to think. The same thing goes for seeing someone who is thin or skinny and being like, wow, they must be so healthy. Like, they're so beautiful. They're so pop. They're so worthy simply because they live in a small body. Challenge your friends and family. This is one that we are, myself and my husband, recently trying to do more of as Cole grows up and is living in a body that people, for whatever reason, feel like they can comment on because babies are cute and squishy. And, you know, we're just trying to draw some boundaries around body neutral conversation and just being very vigilant about how we allow people to talk about bodies around our children. So that's something that is very difficult, especially if you're the first person in your family to want to change this kind of dynamic, this fat phobic trend. Four, learn to appreciate and accept your own body. Five, encourage acceptance of body diversity. And this is some of what we were talking about, but celebrating and accepting all body shapes and sizes, following brands, pages, and businesses that are inclusive of people from all ages, groups, cultures, genders, and shapes. Educating yourself about diet culture. And if you're here, you're already doing that. So check there. Being mindful of and reducing toxic and unhelpful diet, body, and appearance-based talk. Avoiding judging a person's health or eating and exercising behaviors based on their weight, shape, or appearance. And adopting a zero tolerance policy for weight and appearance teasing, shaming, or bullying to yourself and others. Because we don't have to go down this rabbit hole, but they've done a lot of research on the lifelong negative impact this can have on a person's mental health, body image, and their relationship with food. I mean, I can't tell you how many of the clients we work with who have mentioned having something mentioned to them from an early age or having an example set to them that people living in larger bodies are bad or they're never going to be loved or they're never going to be happy, that it sticks with them for their entire lives until, you know, we're able to unpack some of that together.
And I hopefully, like, kind of like going back to like the Whole 30 example, there's now a shift coming, hopefully, over time. Kind of like the work that you're doing with your family around Cole and making sure that it's very body neutral. I've been doing it for years with my family. It's hard. It's uncomfortable there at times. They don't always get it because, you know, as much as we don't comment on larger bodies, I've had to stop family members from saying, he's so skinny. He's so skinny with about, you know, my son. And to me, it's like, no, we just don't comment on bodies. There's just no need to. There's no point in it. There's no point in talking about that he's thin. Like, okay, it's just his body type. There's a lot of different body types. People come in all different shapes and sizes, and we can celebrate that. So hopefully there's a shift coming for this next generation as our generation is like unpacking the, you know, maybe what we've been taught and seen growing up with the negative self-talk that you brought up too. I actually talked about this on Instagram the other day because I noticed for some reason lately I was having more than normal negative body image thoughts, and that doesn't feel great. And I didn't want to go down that, you know, that rabbit hole again. So I decided to be really intentional right away with it. And I would automatically switch it from a negative to an appreciative thought. And I gave the example of, I went to that Beyonce concert, had a great time. And there was a thought in my head, it was like, my stomach feels really bloated in this skirt. And I immediately switched that to, I'm so grateful for my body for letting me like come to this concert and dance with my daughter and have a fantastic time. We had to park far away. There was a lot of walking and standing and dancing. And instead of thinking my stomach looks more bloated than I would like, I thought, I'm so grateful I'm able to do all of this. So that has actually, honestly, it has like a really immediate impact on me, and it's been very helpful the last few days. So that's a little like take home tip. If you start to challenge those thoughts, replace them with something you're grateful for. I find it really helpful.
Absolutely.
And if you're a parent doing this work, kudos, because it's hard.
It is really hard. Actually, I am not an expert by any means, but I would recommend a book to everybody, whether or not you have small children, but especially if you have small children. It's called Bodies Are Cool by Tyler Fetter. This is something we had on Cole's registry, and a friend got this for us, and recently we started reading it. If everyone understood more of what's in the pages of this book, we would be on our way to battling against diet culture. Just talking about like different skin colors and different body shapes and different amounts of hairiness and how it's all cool. It's all totally cool. And actually, I don't know if this is coincidence or not. We started reading this book, and now when I'm sitting at the kitchen table feeding Cole, he likes to point down to my leg where I have a little pink mole on my, and he's like, Mom, I want you to look at this. Look, there's a spot here on your skin. And he does it, he just did it this morning, which is why I was thinking of it. He does it almost every day. And it's like, yeah, that's mommy's skin. Like, that's what it looks like. And he has beautiful olive tan skin, so different. And I just want him to know that, like, it's all cool. Shape, size, color. It's, yeah, something that is so much work to practice and to embody, but is so worth the work.
So worth it. My 7-year-old this summer at the pool, I was like in a 2-piece, and she kind of grabbed like a little chunk of fat on my belly and just kind of like was like playing, like, I don't know. And she just kind of grabbed it because, like we were saying, personal space is non-existent. And I had another mom there, and I kind of made a joke. I was like, oh, what are you doing? Like, why are you grabbing me or whatever? Nothing about my body. And another mom goes, yeah, your mom's very thin. And I just, and it was like, oh, there's even like, I wasn't going to say anything. She had a little chunk of belly fat. Okay, I have that. That's fine. And I don't want her to think there's anything wrong with having a stomach roll when you sit down, or a couple, whatever. And yeah, that response kind of, I was like, ugh, that's not what this was. This was just my 7-year-old kind of poking and prodding me, because that's what kids do. And there was no need to bring up my size at all. And yeah, it's just everywhere once you start to notice it.
It really is. Yeah. So I think what we're saying here, the moral of the story, if you will, is yes, you probably have some sort of weight bias or fat phobia if you've grown up with any touch point to media. And especially if you have, you know, family influence or, you know, conditioning of the diet nature. So what can you do about it? What are you willing to do about it? I think is kind of what we're trying to give you some tools and tips to work on here. But know that it's going to be a continual process. And it's something, like you mentioned, Lauren, with that experience, that might catch you off guard and come out of nowhere. And it might be a thought or rumination, a thought you have about yourself or someone else that's repetitive, that you have to challenge and intentionally shift. But it's something that can be changed. So it's not like, doesn't feel defeating to be like, oh, I can't believe I struggle with weight bias as much as I've worked on my health and worked on myself. Like, it's okay. I mean, it's not okay, but you will be okay. And we can work against weight bias and fat phobia together.
Yes. Just takes a little bit of awareness and intentionality, like everything else.
Yeah. Woo, this was an episode.
That's a good one. We dove deep into some stuff here.
Oh, man. If you liked what you heard, would you please do us the biggest favor and leave a 5-star review or share this to your social media stories? I know we ask you this all the time, but it truly is the biggest compliment in the podcast world. It allows other people to find us. It basically tells the algorithm that we are worth listening to because you like hearing what we're talking about. So if you have 30 seconds, please leave us a 5-star review and we will catch you on the flip side.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. If you like what you heard today, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, and then head on over to nutritioncoachingwithnicole.com where you can sign up for my weekly emails where I send out my favorite tips, tricks, advice, and support every single Monday morning to help you kick your week off right. Thanks for listening. Until next time.